Ron Jackson, W266DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. Suspicious letters are sent to elections offices in several states. Officials say some included traces of fentanyl. The FBI and U.S. Postal Service are investigating. Washington Secretary of State Steve Hobbs.
To the people trying to, you're not disrupting the election, right? You're causing a slight delay. This will be certified. They will be counted. Democracy will prevail. And this domestic terrorism is not going to slow that down.
The FBI has issued a warning to exercise care in handling mail, especially from unrecognized senders, and report anything suspicious immediately. The U.S. Justice Department says it has filed documents in two separate court cases regarding traveling to get an abortion. CBS News legal analyst Thane Rosenbaum explains.
The legal question is, can a state deprive its residents of the right to travel to states where abortions are legal? The Department of Justice is going on the offensive to resolve that question by pointing to the constitutional right to interstate travel.
The United Nations is expressing cautious optimism to the four-hour daily halt scheduled in fighting Israel has agreed to in its battle with Hamas. UN spokesperson Stefan Dujarric suggests,
in order for this to be done safely for humanitarian purposes, it would have to be agreed with all parties to the conflict to be truly effective.
Meantime, in southern Israel earlier today, air sirens sounded and people ran after an unidentified drone hit a building in the port city of Eilat. The Israeli military says it caused light damage. Authorities are still searching for a January 6th suspect who fled his New Jersey home when he was served a warrant. CBS's Wendy Gillette has more.
The FBI is still hunting for 47-year-old Gregory Yetman after he ran from his central New Jersey home and hopped a fence Wednesday morning. The former New Jersey National Guardsman is accused of storming the Capitol on January 6th. The FBI is offering a $10,000 reward for information that leads to Yetman's arrest. Wendy Gillette, CBS News.
Two hospitalized sheriff's deputies are fighting for their lives after being ambushed outside Tampa, Florida by a man in a car. CBS's Roxana Saberi has details.
28-year-old Ralph Boozy, who has a violent criminal history, is facing three counts of attempted murder on a law enforcement officer. Deputies were called to the home by the suspect's mother, who told police her son was acting irrational and violent. After police arrived, he left and circled back, then sped toward the deputies. Boozy was tased and taken into custody.
According to the Hillsborough County Sheriff's Office, additional charges against the suspect may be pending. This is CBS News.
You don't need a job platform. You need a hiring partner. Indeed lets you schedule and conduct virtual interviews all from one place. Start at Indeed.com/credits.
This is Mean Gene Okerlund, and I'm talking with Brett Uhlberg, owner of Robert Half Diamonds. Brett, I hear you pay cash for gold.
Not only gold, but silver, diamonds, and any form like jewelry, teeth, coins, flatware.
Why should I sell you my gold?
Why not? Our store is the only store that recommends you shop around before you sell. This way you know you're getting the most money. But if Robert Half Diamonds can't beat a competitor's offer on your scrap gold, we'll give you $20 just for letting us try.
Hey, what if I'm shy?
You? Well, at Robert Half Diamonds, we sit with you at a table. We go through your items and make you an offer. You're not pressured, and we offer more on jewelry that we can resell.
Can I trade my gold for a new piece of jewelry?
Of course you can, and not only that, we can custom make a piece of jewelry using your gold and gems.
Hey, there you have it, folks. Sell your gold to my friends at Robert Half Diamonds. Visit them on 76th and Layton in Greenfield. Robert Half Diamonds, where they want your business.
Roll into this Friday night and strike a chord of fun, food, and music at Foxview Lanes in Waukesha. A Friday night live music party kicks off at 8 p.m. and goes until midnight every Friday night. And the best part of this party? There's no cover charge. While you're having fun, grab dinner and take advantage of $2 off all sandwiches on Friday nights. This Friday night, dance to the music of Bail Jumpers. 2440 West Sunset Drive in Waukesha. Call 262-544-2010 or check out foxviewlanes.com.
Yes. After the bucket, Giannis followed up with a monster face and then a whistle foul. Number 34, technical for celebration.
And they They called a technical foul on Giannis. That's his second, and he would be gone for the game.
And he seems unapologetic about it. He's saying he's out.
What did he do?
Bucks head coach Adrian Griffin after the game.
I thought he made a tremendous play, and he was extremely respectful to the refs. And, you know, I think I just got to do a better job of protecting him.
The final, Milwaukee 120, Detroit 118. The Bucks now head to Indiana to play the Pacers. Game time tonight, 6 o'clock. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Don't change the station, but do watch out for deer, would ya? You know, they're running around all willy-nilly. It is the Krebscast with me, Charlie Behrens, on Civic Media and the Civic Media app. Shaw.
Lows around 29 tonight, under clear skies, with a chance for scattered showers. Winds out of the west, 5 to 10 miles an hour. Highs around 41 tomorrow. Lows around 27 tomorrow night. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Eric Height. Currently, it's 43 degrees.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram. Your home of the Earl Ingram Show. Weekday mornings from 8 till 10 on The Shaw. 540 AM and 101.1 FM WAUK.
Now, here is Rick Smith.
Thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, I just got back from Washington, D.C. this afternoon, and I can tell you all about it. Had a great trip. I went to the Senate Finance Committee. They had me, one tax law expert from NYU, a law professor, two Republican witnesses, but even they seemed relatively sane most of the time. And it went pretty well. I was, of course, on Senator Wyden's side. He's concerned about the buy, borrow, die strategy, where people like are really rich and just withdraw money from their brokerage account and let it go negative and don't actually sell anything. Because the thing is, if you have a lot of stock in your brokerage account, which rich people tend to do, you don't pay taxes based on the money you withdraw. You pay taxes based on the stock you sell. And that might have nothing to do with each other. For most people, they're pretty related. You sell stock, you withdraw the money. For the really rich people, you can withdraw the money and sell the stock the next day, the next year, the next century, or after you die. And so that's what the senators, several of the senators are concerned about, is the fact that people make money from their stock going up. That's great. We're all for that. And they spend the money. That's good too. But they never pay any income taxes on it. And the thing which I had to explain to them is that if you're really rich, you don't need any income. You can just spend money without having any of what we define as income.
And how do you do that? I mean, you know, I've watched some of these videos with the guy, the rich dad, poor dad guy, who said what you've said. He goes, look, you know, rich people, they don't have income. They don't go to a job. They have passive income. They have portfolio income, but they don't work for a living. They don't go out there swinging a hammer or driving a truck and collecting a paycheck at the end of the week. So how do you, you know, if you've got all these stocks and you haven't realized any of that income, how do you exist?
Well, I'll tell you. Let's say you put $100,000 into Apple years back. Let's say that Apple stock is now worth $1 million. So I've made $900,000, the way most people would think about it. As far as the IRS is concerned, though, I haven't made a penny.
Right.
I haven't sold the Apple stock. But I can withdraw money from my brokerage account I can withdraw $500,000 from my brokerage account. And as far as they're concerned, I have $1 million in Apple stock, negative $500,000 in cash. It's below zero. It's so I owe them $500,000. And they're fine with that. You know? And then the interest just keeps accruing. So that month later, maybe I owe them $501,000. And a month after that, $502,000. But as long as the Apple stock keeps going up in value by more than that, they're fine with that. It works fine.
Yeah.
I never have any quote unquote income because I never actually sell anything. I just withdraw money against it. Kind of like if you could do a cash out refi of a mortgage. You don't sell the house, but you can still get money. So it's kind of like I do a cash out refi of my stock every month. I mean, I don't really do that every month, but in theory, I could.
You could, yeah. But you know, now, so you're going to pay interest on that money that you're taking out. Do you get to write that off on your taxes?
You don't. Well, yes, you do. First of all, you do get to write that off. And secondly, you don't actually pay it. They just increase the amount you owe them every month.
Okay.
So as long as the stock goes up more than the amount that the interest and the amount you withdraw, they're fine with that. It could go on for the rest of your life. And then after you die, then they sell the stock, but your heirs don't pay any income tax on that either because it's a tax-free due to some step-up basis rules. So with all that money I make on the stock, assuming I don't sell it and I eventually die, which most people eventually do, I heard, it's never taxed, not to me, not to my heirs, not to anybody. It's just never taxable income. And that's the basic thing we were talking about today. And most of the senators who talked about it agree. This is kind of ridiculous that we have these rich people who don't pay any taxes. And so Senator Wyden has come up with some proposals to change that, to make people of over $1 billion of assets, which are only a couple thousand people in the whole country, make those people pay taxes on the money they make, whether or not they sell their stock. So I'll tell you, a bunch of the senators came in to talk. Senator Warner suggested that maybe we should charge them tax if they borrow money against it, but not otherwise. A few of the senators spent their entire talking time talking about the customer service of the IRS, and they don't have enough people to answer the phones and things like that. One Republican senator, Marsha Blackburn from Tennessee.
Oh, do I want to know this? Do I want to know what crazy Marsha had to say? Yeah, I guess I do.
Okay, I'll tell you. She said that the IRS is doing a poor job auditing people. They went to her state. They audited a bunch of her constituents that came to complain to her. And they even told the constituents they had overpaid their taxes and they sent them checks. So she thinks that's a sign the IRS is incompetent.
What?
I would suggest maybe if the people getting checks were probably happy about that.
Yeah, I think so.
So I don't know why they were complaining to their senator that the government was sending them this check.
I gotta tell you, I'm not a betting person, but I'd bet my last dollar that's an anecdotal story. That she knows somebody who knows somebody who knows somebody who told a story about that.
Could be. She wasn't under oath. So I don't know. That's how it went. And surprisingly enough, of all the senators, Bill Cassidy was on our side. He was saying he thinks this is ridiculous. And what he said is that these people who do this, well, someone was talking about like how many taxpayers there are in the top 1% and the top 0.01% and stuff. And he says the people who do this strategy, they're not even counted on that list because they don't pay much taxes at all.
Right.
So they wouldn't be in the top 1% for income. And he sounded like he was on our side. I talked later to Senator Wyden's staff. They said they're already on the case of contacting his staff to see if he wants to sign up to help on this. So I think we might have an unexpected ally, Bill Cassidy from Louisiana. One of the highlights was when Elizabeth Warren walked into the room, kind of everybody, like all of a sudden, this was two hours after we'd started, and people were kind of slumping a little bit. But then Elizabeth Warren walked into the room and sat in her seat. And a lot of the senators only come when it's their turn to speak.
Right.
They don't hang around the whole time. Well, I mean, some don't show up at all, but the ones who do show up mostly just come when it's their turn to speak. She came, everyone sort of looked up and sat up straight and looked perky and just had this feeling that everyone was looking at her, you know?
Yeah,
and she gave a couple minutes speech about how it's ridiculous that billionaires are getting so rich and other people are falling behind. And so much is unfair. So we
get that. So what's the answer here? I mean, you know, I read some of the stuff. I caught a couple of minutes of the different clips and stuff. So what's the answer here? I mean, you know, we've known this. This isn't new, Morris. This is stuff that we've talked about before. None of this is new. What's the answer? And is there a path forward? Is Cassidy, being on this side helpful? You got to get the 60 votes in the Senate. You got a crazy Republican House. What's the way forward?
Well, that's a good point. Getting 60 votes, I don't know, but I think we're a lot further ahead than we were when I wrote the Tax the Rich book that explained these same problems.
Right.
Then this was considered a pretty crazy off-the-wall idea when we presented that, you know, when you were in Washington, D.C. at that conference a couple of years back in April.
Yeah.
Now, we have the chairman of the Senate Finance Committee on our side. We have the president of the United States on our side. We have, you know, a bunch of people in the House on our side. Not the majority, of course, because it's run by crazy Republicans. But so I think we've moved a lot further. Have we won? No, we haven't won, but a lot of things take time.
Yeah.
You know, the Civil Rights Act took decades through the 50s that, you know, filibustered here, there, and everywhere until, you know, it was during my lifetime when it passed. I think major changes take some time. I think we're getting public opinion on our side. According to Senator Wyden, when he goes to town halls, people are complaining about rich people not paying their taxes. I was kind of surprised at that, because he's the only one who's mentioned that, but I'll take his word for it. So I think we're making progress. Is this bill going to pass the House? No. We'd even have trouble in the previous House with the Democrats leading it.
Right.
When Richard Neal was chairman of Ways and Means, he wasn't in favor of raising anybody's taxes.
Which is insane to me. But here's the thing, and this is where, as you laid out what you were talking about in the hearing and here a second ago, when you tell that story to average everyday working people, much like, you know, I say, you know, one of the big successes of the UAW strike is that they went out, you know, to the general public and said, hey, look, here's what our members are earning. This is the lifestyle that, you know, that they're making on, you know, 15 some dollars an hour. This is not the gold standard of employment that it used to be. But you've got CEOs who have taken $1 billion in compensation over the last decade. You've got an industry that's made $250 billion in profit off of our labor, and they're not sure. And people responded to that. I think the more you tell that story of, look, you got people who, you know, they're doing well in the game of Wall Street. They're making lots of money. They're paying no taxes on it. That's a huge thing, I think.
I think you're right. I think it's the unfairness aspect that really riles people up and moves public opinion. And that's the point. That's the case that we're making. Like, it doesn't really affect your life whether Elon Musk pays more or less taxes. It might affect his life, but it won't really affect his life either. Tell you the truth, he's so rich.
No,
but it wouldn't really affect you and me at all. But it's just so unfair that some people make so much money and don't pay any tax at all, and other people are struggling to get by.
But what do you say to the argument, Morris, that, well, you know, it's because they work hard, they're smart, they, you know, whatever that Horatio Alger kind of mentality is, that they earn it. Elon Musk earns every penny.
Well, sure. But a lot of people are like that. Talk about, you know, a chef opening a restaurant in, you know, Pennsylvania. You know, he works hard. I'll bet he works harder than I ever worked. He takes risks. His restaurant might fail. A lot of them do. His income is uncertain. He doesn't know how much money he's going to make. Hopefully he'll make enough to get by. So that chef is just as deserving of a tax break as Elon Musk is. Maybe even more so, because he probably didn't get, he already wasn't born as rich as Elon Musk. So I think the same argument applies to almost everybody, or a lot of people anyway.
So last question I've got for you, because again, I think this is one of those things that I think you can run on. I think Biden should be talking about this kind of stuff. I think politicians should be talking about this stuff. This is the meat and potatoes policy stuff that I think is important for people to get behind, instead of this divisive, you know, red hat, blue hat stuff. This is that kitchen table stuff. Do you think this is part of what the Biden strategy is? Do you think you're going to hear more of that from him, or was this just a one-off hearing where we got a couple more people on the side and, well, we'll see in a couple elections?
Well, President Biden certainly talks about this. It was part of his budget proposal, and not this exact bill, but a fairly similar bill, to say that people have to pay taxes on their capital gains before they sell their stock. So I think it's certainly part of what President Biden is running on. I think there's a problem because some Democrats are afraid. They're afraid of being accused of, oh, you're raising everyone's taxes, from the Republicans, even if they only want to raise taxes of a few thousand of the richest people in the country.
Yeah.
Oh, we don't want our taxes raised. They're trying to make middle-class Americans, they're trying to make Americans who work for a living feel like they have more in common with the billionaires than about the people who are working just a little bit harder than they are.
Yeah, no,
and that's what we have to do, is the people that make $20 an hour have more in common with people that make $15 an hour than they do with Elon Musk. And that's what we have to explain to them.
Amen. Good stuff. And you guys are doing great work. I hope folks will check out your website, patrioticmillionaires.org. We'll get links out on social media. Morris, as always, great talking with you, my friend.
Thank you, sir. Great to talk to you.
Let's take a quick break, right back after this with your thoughts. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
You know, the tax issue is one of those things, not very sexy, not something that gets, a lot of attention, but I think extremely important. And when you talk about, these issues in those frames, the fairness frame, that is something I think is really important. And when you lay it out like that, you got these rich people who are worth $1 billion paying a lower tax rate or no taxes. And being one of that Mitt Romney's 47%, those people who don't pay federal taxes. Now, look, they do pay a lot of state taxes, and they do pay a lot of sales taxes, because they consume stuff. But I'll tell you, they figure out how to get around all that. And that's really been how we've created a massive wealth class. And so I was having this conversation today of, using policy and the tax code, and how, over decades, the moneyed interests continue to get whatever it is they want, whenever they want it, however they want it. And working people keep getting stiffed. Which is why, again, they keep pushing us at divisive stuff. Who's marrying who? Who's going to what bathroom? You know, stuff that there isn't a solution for. Because they know if we can keep people eating each other, they're not going to focus on the fact that you're getting robbed blind. And look, this is bipartisan, the kind of anger. You know, I said, yesterday, and I got a couple of emails from people who are like, you're comparing the Occupy Wall Street people and the Tea Party. Oh, that's not fair to, whichever side they were on. And I said, look, the reality is they were both angry about the same stuff. Rich people are screwing them on both extremes, the right and the left, and in the center, don't forget them. So for me, there's an opportunity here. I think what Morris and his group are doing with the Great Economy Project is important, getting out into communities and talking to people and explaining this stuff, because it's complicated. It's really complicated when you get down into how it is that Donald Trump avoids paying taxes, how it is that, him overinflating his properties benefits him, or underinflating benefits him, or doing both simultaneously benefits him. And who does it hurt? Well, it's a victimless crime, right, Rick? No. Those are dollars that aren't going into the coffers that fund the things that we need. Infrastructure, education, healthcare, social safety net programs for our veterans and our homeless and for our seniors and for children. All of the things that don't get the funding that we need being hoarded by a handful. And I go back to, the first Forbes 400 had two billionaires on it in today's dollars. Two. We now have, 1,500? And they're not just one or two billionaires. They're worth hundreds of billions. It's one of those things that at what point do you then get upset about it and then want to act on it? Now, as I said the other day, when we had a high top marginal tax rate, that wealth was spread a little more equally. Not completely equally, but we had a high tax rate, which meant, people didn't want to give money to the government, so they invested in libraries and in schools and in hospitals, paid their workers better. They did all kinds of things. So, for me, that's the part of this that's important. A tax code that doesn't take everybody's wealth, but I got to tell you, gives people the opportunity to get ahead. Let's real quick before the break, get Chad on line one. Chad, how are you?
Good to talk to you again, Rick. It's been a while.
Yeah, quick. I got 2 minutes.
Okay, this thing about Trump not paying his taxes, come on, man. Weren't you watching the big Rachel Maddow reveal show when it showed, she had the big tax scam all lined up, and then she goes on the air to actually show how much he actually paid in taxes? Now, that's the one extreme. Second extreme, I'm a blue-collar guy, and I'll do whatever I can and take advantage of whatever tax loopholes
sure.
I can
and
save a dollar.
Chad, I said from the beginning, and I've said all along, Trump did what was legal. The thing is he didn't want anybody to see, one, how little money he does have and where he was getting these things. My problem is not with Trump. My problem is not with the individual billionaires. My problem is with the system that allows them to be able to game the system to where they pay less taxes than you do.
Well, it's fair enough to that point, but if you look at what the actual millionaires or people in that 1%, what they're paying, I believe they're paying about 38 or 40% of the actual federal taxes.
36 is the top rate.
Okay. So
deductions and all the other stuff that they do.
Well, sure, but I'm well below them, and I make the same deductions. So
No, you don't.
Well,
Trump took most of those tax breaks away for you, and he did. Needed, all of your union dues, all of that stuff, he took that away. But I appreciate it. I got to take a break,
dues.
Chad. I appreciate it.
Take care.
This is worth the minutes. I got to take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You listen to the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
I'm Rick. This is the Shaw WAUK.
CBS News Brief. Investigators are looking into a series of potentially deadly and targeted attacks on election workers across the country. CBS's Nora O'Donnell.
Workers in some of those offices were processing ballots from Tuesday's election, and in some cases, the buildings were evacuated, interrupting the counting of votes.
Israel agrees to implement a daily pause for humanitarian purposes in its fight against Hamas in Gaza. CBS's Weijia Zhang reports.
This will be every day, a period of 4 hours a day where Israeli military operations will pause.
President Biden stops in Belvedere, Illinois, along the Illinois-Wisconsin state line to mark the reopening of a Stellantis plant and the end of the United Auto Workers strike, the longest in 25 years.
American workers are ready to work harder than anybody else, but they just need to be given a shot, a fair shot and a fair wage. That's not too much to ask.
CBS News Brief. I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
Your hometown radio refreshed. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
For Civic Media News, I'm Nate Wuggehow. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Enrollment is up at the Universities of Wisconsin for the first time since 2014. The system is out with its numbers for the first 10 days of the school year. It says there are 1,700 more students enrolled than last year. There are now a little more than 162,000 students enrolled at state universities in Wisconsin. 10 of 13 four-year schools are seeing increases, but enrollment at two-year branch campuses is down again. Officials with the Biden administration were in Wausau this week to praise how they're quickly and aggressively addressing PFAS contamination. Senior Biden advisor Tom Perez went to see the city's new water treatment plant on Thursday. Wausau is set to receive nearly $6 million in federal funds to replace lead service lines. Perez said that mayors across the country should be looking at Wausau to learn how to address the forever chemicals. Nate Wuggehout, Civic Media News.
Timeout.
Remember, we're a team that plays together. Listen, the winning will take care of itself. We just have to get everyone involved.
In interscholastic sports, we celebrate what makes every one of us unique. And in the pursuit of a common goal, everyone in the huddle, in the bleachers, and in the community comes together. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
The Civic Media Network of radio stations across Wisconsin. It's your hometown radio, refreshed.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw.
Lows around 29 tonight, under clear skies, with a chance for scattered showers. Winds out of the west, 5 to 10 miles an hour. Highs around 41 tomorrow. Lows around 27 tomorrow night. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 41 degrees.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
Are you asking the court to do something that spells out a school funding formula?
This is not about the school finance formula itself. It's about the voucher programs. It says to create a system of public schools. It doesn't say anything about creating two parallel systems and sucking the money out of the public school system and providing it to the private school system, which is what is happening.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow. Weekday morning, 6 till 8. On your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Be a part of the resistance. Check out the Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson, Monday nights at 7 on The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM WAUK, and on the Civic Media app. Waukesha, home of Les Paul, our awesome farmers market, and The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM WAUK. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
It's an interesting point Chad brings up, and I don't want to completely dismiss his point. But if you look at what's happened over the last 50 years, we've seen a massive redistribution of wealth in this country. And this is one of those things that for me is so clear. We have seen policy happen that has made work pay less, that have created a system where billionaires get tax breaks that working people don't. And I look at Trump's tax law of 2017. Anything that was to go to the middle class, anything that happened, that little bit that we did get, sunsets in a decade. So by 2027, any benefit that you have gotten goes away, and it actually flips and gets worse to where you end up having to pay it back. But corporate tax rates, those are permanent. The tax rates for the very wealthy, those are permanent. And understand when people talk about the golden age of America, you know, everyone go, the 1950s and 1960s, you know, jobs were plentiful. We were paying for our wars. We weren't in debt. We had paid World War II off. We had Korea. We had Vietnam. We were flush. We were investing in an enormous infrastructure. We were making education possible. We gave a generation of white men a whole bunch of money to buy houses and get education and do all kinds of things through the GI Bill. We were doling it out because we were taxing rich people at a much, much higher rate. And the other day we had our friend Mateus Vernengo on, and his example is right. You know, think of the Gilded Age and all the rich people that you knew of that era. You know, we all know the names, the Rothschilds, the Vanderbilts, the Morgans, the Carnegies. We all know those names. We know the robber barons. Today, they're 1,500 billionaires, so everyone knows one. Everyone knows the name of one. We all know Musk and Bezos and Buffett and Gates and the six Waltons. We all know those names too. But go into the 60s, 1950s, 60s, 70s. You know who were those rich people? Who were those robber barons? And he says you can't name them. I mean, there was Howard Hunt, and there were maybe a couple of names of rich people that you thought of, but they were nowhere near the Gilded Age wealth that we're seeing now and back then. And it has everything to do with the tax code and a redistribution of wealth. And yeah, I'm more than willing to use that word. I used it during the Tea Party uprisings when people said, you wanted to redistribute wealth. I go, yeah, I do. The way it was when my grandparents' generation were working, where you had jobs that could, a single income could support a family, where you had, opportunity to go on to college and not take on a lifetime of debt. You were able to go as far as your talents would take you. But now we're in this Hunger Games scenario where, the wealthy are going, hey, I know there were 10 cookies on the plate and we grabbed 9 of them and you better look out because that guy over there is going to get your cookie. And I've always said, look, they may have all the money, but we've out-procreated them. There are more of us, and we should be voting. But they're masters of division. Look, I don't blame Trump for taking a tax break that's there. I don't. I blame the fact that there are politicians who put that tax break there. That is the point. It's not, we're always talking about individuals and not about the policy that allows these people to take advantage of this stuff and also redistribute wealth away from work. The fact that we tax work at a higher rate than we tax capital gains is kind of crazy. And I know, we need rich people because they're smart and they know what to do, and they're the job creators, we're told. And I fundamentally disagree with that argument. The job creators are us, the people in every community who have an idea of how they want to live their lives and start a business or the spending that we make in our local communities. It's not some rich guy making choices in a CEO suite. And where I'm frustrated in this moment is I see us divided. But when you talk about these economic issues, when you're talking about how do we get to a point where we're ensuring that, look, No kid goes to bed hungry. No veteran goes to bed on the streets. Granny doesn't have to eat cat food. That we have, you know, cutting edge technology and infrastructure. You know, we want to thump our chests and say we're number one. We want to say we're the greatest country in the world. I'm sorry, but having the largest number of billionaires doesn't make us the greatest country in the world. Having wealth distributed into the hands of a few at the cost of the many doesn't make us great. And I say this every time, and I've said this a number of times on the show. I'm sure people have heard this. Look, every time a president takes office, I wish that they are the person who returns reward to work. That they're the folks who, you know, Ronald Reagan once said that, you know, the best anti-poverty program is a job. And I've amended that saying the best anti-poverty program is a union job, one with living wages, with retirement and health security, with job security, with opportunity. That's the best anti-poverty program. And that's what we should be focusing on. And this is where, again, I go back to Biden. I think he's on the right page in that. And I'm going to keep fighting for that because I think he's right. Now, you go, well, Trump, he said all these things. Yeah. All the things that he said on infrastructure, all the things he said on manufacturing, all the things he said on trade, I am behind. Working people are behind. The problem is it was all talk. The problem is how many infrastructure weeks did we have? 100? I mean, I remember a lot of pictures. I remember a lot of Rose Garden ceremony. I remember a lot of ceremony. I remember, you know, shovels and hats. I remember all kinds of stuff. But what I don't remember is him actually building the infrastructure. I remember a lot of talk on trade policy. And to his credit, and I do give him credit for making some reasonable changes to NAFTA. I would have liked to have seen more. But there are some good things that Democrats got put in there as well, along with the labor movement. And the credit I give him is I think he's the only one who could have gotten that done. Because there's no Republican that would have done it. But my problem keeps coming back to this idea that it was all talk. I remember, you know, right after his inauguration, I came on the show and I said, look, if he's serious about that $3 trillion infrastructure package, I'm 100% behind it. If he does that, he's unbeatable for re-election. Because that money is going to filter through every community in this country. That money is going to create jobs all across this country. And all it was talk. Now, here's the other part of this, and I also remember saying this back then as well. It won't be done with prevailing wage. It won't be done with labor protections like we're seeing out of the Biden administration. So when you look at the two from a purely worker issue standpoint, there is no comparison. Joe Biden is the better of the two candidates, without question, hands down. Because everything that he has done, every legislation that they've passed, every investment that they've made has been making communities better, making work rewarded, and helping families build. I think that's important stuff. So when I talk about the tax code, and I have, you know, rich guys like Morris Pearl come on, because Morris is probably one of the wealthiest people I know. And he's telling us, hey, the game is rigged. Hey, working people. Hey, stupid. Wake up. We're screwing you. And look, does Morris take those deductions? Yeah, of course he does. He'd be stupid not to. And this is the reason that I have Morris on so often is because I think it's important to hear a rich guy who's worth, you know, several hundred million dollars, saying, look, I don't do any work. I sit and I look at numbers. I collect dividends. I'm a rich guy. I should be the target. And I'm advocating for these changes because here's the thing. Here's what he knows. He knows there's a point at which the anger then becomes real and targeted at people like him. And then we end up in a situation like some third world countries where he's going to have to, barricade him in some himself in his family in some encampment to stop from being kidnapped. Nobody wants that. So, when Morris comes on and talks about, hey, we need to tax rich people like me, it's not out of benevolence. It's out of wanting to have a safe society, wanting to have something to pass along to his children. And not wanting to have to barricade himself inside his four walls. Now, is radical self-interest something that we're shocked by? No, of course not. And I've said it before. Look, I would take all those deductions too. Now, on the Trump side, there were a lot of deductions as a working person that I used to take before. Can't do it anymore. Work boots and work clothing and gloves and stuff that you need for work, union dues, any association fees, all that stuff gone. Can't deduct that anymore. I know he gave us a higher personal income deduction that as the years go on erodes. But hey, we got some trinkets up front. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. Lots to get to. Right back after this. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1935. The Committee for Industrial Organizations was created by 8 unions as part of the American Federation of Labor. United Mine Workers President John L. Lewis was the driving force behind this new committee. His aim was to organize mass production industrial workers as opposed to focusing on those in the skilled trades. While the American Federation of Labor had included some industrial unions, the craft unionists were the dominant force in the organization. The Great Depression had hit industrial workers and their unions hard. Leaders from the heavily affected unions pressed for more support from the AFL. In response, the AFL did authorize organizing drives in the automobile, rubber, and steel industries, but they gave little financial support or effective leadership to those unions. Matters came to a head at the AFL's 1935 convention when mine workers president John L. Lewis punched the president of the Carpenters Union. Afterwards, Lewis called together various industrial union leaders, including Sidney Hillman, head of the Amalgamated Clothing Workers, and Harvey Fremming of the Oil Workers Union, to discuss the creation of the CIO. In its statement of purpose, the CIO declared its aim to encourage the AFL to organize by industry. However, the AFL's leadership was not sympathetic to what they saw as an internal rivalry. In 1936, the AFL suspended all of the CIO unions. This led to the industrial union's breakaway from the AFL to form a rival federation. The CIO changed its name to the Congress of Industrial Organizations. By 1938, the CIO had amassed 3 million members. The CIO ran successful organizing drives in auto, mining, meatpacking, and steel. The two union organizations finally reemerged in 1955, forming what is known today as the AFL-CIO. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, therickssmithshow.com. More information coming out about Clarence Thomas. And again, this is another one of those rich people thing. They've got lots of money. Lots of money. And they dole it out. And it's amazing. I've said before, I've got friends who've served in Congress and they all tell the same story. No one's ever bought my vote. No one's ever bought my vote. But they get my ear 15 minutes at a time because they've got to go dialing for dollars. And it's amazing how cheap you can get your voice heard, a couple $1,000s. And for a millionaire, a multimillionaire, a billionaire, a couple of grand, not hard. I love how what Morris says. You know, when I hand out my business card that says, you know, chairman of the Patriotic Millionaire, how many people return my phone call? It's quite amazing. And so I'm looking at this story about Clarence Thomas, who evidently back in 1999, you know, was on the court for about 8 years, wanted an RV, a Prevost Marathon RV, which was worth $267,230 back in 1999. Now, I did the inflation calculator thing over at the Bureau of Labor Statistics. That's $500,000 in today's dollars. He bought a rolling $500,000 behemoth with somebody else's money. And it was supposed to be a loan, I guess. You know, one of those off-the-book loans. You know, rich people do a lot of that stuff. Off the books. And now we find out he didn't pay it back. Don't worry, we're friends. And what's interesting to me is we're now finding out what I've known for years. Because I remember seeing that RV on 60 Minutes going, how's a Supreme Court justice afford that thing? That's a lot of money. For a guy who was a public servant throughout his entire career, never really made the big money that you see Roberts and Alito and Gorsuch and Amy Coney Barrett making. He worked various government jobs. He was the head of the EEOC, which is how he got himself into a little bit of trouble with Anita Hill, and we won't get into that. But I'm going, how does a guy who has been, you know, on the government paycheck all these years afford a $267,000 RV just to go tooling around on his week on his vacation? We now know billionaires are taking care of him. And I know, no, you again, you know, you didn't buy his vote. And this is true. I am not alleging that there was a quid pro quo, that I'm giving you this money so that you will vote this way on this issue. I've never said that, and I will never say that. What I am saying is, you know, like my friend said, you didn't buy my vote, but you get my ear 15 minutes at a time. Do you think the guy who lent Clarence Thomas $267,230, do you think Clarence takes his phone call? Do you think when he just wants to, you know, wax philosophic, you know, wants to share some insight on the topic of the day, do you think Clarence is going to debate him? Of course not. And this is where you go, you didn't buy his vote, you bought him. And I've said this for the longest time. The Federalist Society, the people that Trump chose his judges from, they groom their people from, you know, I would argue from high school forward, but at least college forward. They do a really good job to where it's not about buying their vote. It's about you already know how they're going to vote before the issue ever comes to them, because you have groomed them throughout the entire process. And you've done it the same way the CIA grooms their assets. You know, we had John Perkins on the program, the guy who wrote Confessions of an Economic Hitman, and he walked through this. It's women and money, man. It's the fast high life. It's what billionaires understand. They throw a little cash around and people jump. It's like herding cats. The only way you herd cats is putting food on the table. And then they all come running. So I'm looking at all of this money and this wealth and all of these favors and these vacations and all of this just obnoxious stuff that our Supreme Court justice has gotten himself in. His wife, who's deep into right-wing politics, who is funded by every crazy right-wing billionaire. You go, explain to me why there isn't a hearing on this, but Hunter Biden, you know, we're crazy about. And what I find really funny is evidently James Comer, the guy who's been like the chief, bulldog, the guy who's been all over this, turns out he's got some shady dealings himself. Evidently, he also paid his brother $200,000 We're now finding out all kinds of interesting, fun, and entertaining things. That Comer and his own brother engaged in land swaps. One of the deals involved $200,000. And a shell company. Wow. Say it isn't so. And again, you know, what's this saying? If that's not a pot calling the kettle black, that's what this is. But will it matter? And this is where you start going, you know, people in glass houses. Now, I've said from the beginning, if they have a smoking gun where Biden took money from the Chinese government, yeah, we got problems. But there's no smoking gun. There's nothing there. What this is truly the Trump witch hunt. And Trump has already told us, if he is elected president, expect all of this to happen. If he is elected president, expect retribution. Expect payback. Does that scare you? Does it concern you that we're now fully down that road? They've already said their 2025 plan is all about patronage. We're only going to hire true blue loyalists. And they're going to go with Schedule F, and they're going to fire all the government employees, and they're going to bring in, you know, their true blue red hats. You know, good governance be damned. Getting things done for the American people, not even an afterthought. And as I've said a million times, I want boring bureaucrats running our government. I want people who show up, who have the expertise to do the work that we need to get done so we get the results that we need. I'm not a fan of big government or small government. I want effective government. I want our government to do the things that we individually cannot do. Pave roads, provide health care, educate a populace, do those things, defend the country. But when we got someone running on the platform of retribution, and look, he's talking about a talk show host as his VP. One heartbeat away from the presidency, you're going to have Schmucker Carlson. Are you not concerned for the direction of the country? Are you not concerned that nobody paid attention to the Republican debate? And I love what Rona McDaniel, who I think is going to go back to Romney. I think very soon Rona McDaniel is going back to Rona Romney. Rona Romney. I think she's going to go back to Rona Romney. I'll say it once, right? Who, when asked, you know, about the infighting, said, well, it's not helpful. Yeah, it's not helpful. But again, we've got real problems that we're not dealing with. And there's literally nobody in the House who's trying. And this is my problem. We're speeding towards a shutdown. You know, before Thanksgiving. Hey, happy Thanksgiving. And with no end in sight. Because you have ideologues who will burn the House down. And look, this is by design because they believe Democrats are going to cave. They believe Democrats are going to give them everything they want. All they have to do is threaten to burn the House down. They've constantly threatened to shoot the hostage, and Democrats have constantly gone, no, don't shoot the hostage. Whatever you want. No, we'll put the gun down. Maybe this time they won't. And what does that mean for us? We elect people to do a job to get results, not to hold us hostage. And I know Republicans are, you know, just pining for recession. Could this be part of that? I don't know, but I want to hear your thoughts. Something I said got under your skin, on your nerves, something you agree with me, disagree with me. I want to hear it. Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. I do answer all emails personally. If you miss any of the podcast, any of the program, grab the podcast. I highly suggest subscribing. As of December 1st, we will no longer be doing terrestrial radio for the foreseeable future. So podcast is where you're going to be able to get us in the future, and we will be doing that as well the beginning of the new year. Thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. At Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk. You're listening to The Shaw.
WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha.
And always streaming on the
Sometimes
Civic
I
Media app.
I just cannot believe all the stories.